Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LaBounty.
Bob, you'll get a real sense of the hatred that makes football so great.
I've got the fever, gambling fever.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome in, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey LaBounty in with you on, guess what, another Monday night, and another great Monday night to talk about sports as the NBA and NHL playoffs roll on. And it was a big weekend in, I guess, sports we're not used to watching regularly, Corey. We had the Preakness Stakes 2 weeks after that crazy, crazy Kentucky Derby, and this one a lot less crazy, even though there was a horse that lost its rider very early in the race. And yeah, we have the audio from that. And also, Alabama's own Deontay Wilder getting into the ring, but not for long, because he ended it pretty quickly. And that'll lead in directly to our next interview that we got coming up here in the second segment. We're going to be talking with Taryn Walk. She writes sports for Tuscaloosa News, and there's never a lack of things to talk about when you write sports for the Tuscaloosa News. So we'll pick her brain on Deontay Wilder, and she was up there in Brooklyn this weekend at the Barclays Center for that Deontay Wilder-Dominic Brazil fight. And we'll also ask her a little bit about that Alabama softball team who just does not lose. They don't lose in regionals especially, and so they've moved into the super regionals. And we'll also pick her brain a little bit about Alabama football if we get the chance. And also coming up tonight, a guy we haven't gotten on before, but I'm looking forward to talking with him now, especially after last week's NBA lottery, Ollie Cosell. He writes on a New Orleans Pelicans blog. It's called The Bird Writes. It's an SB Nation blog. But he's been writing a ton of stuff about the coming new attraction down there in New Orleans, Zion Williamson, who's expected to be the number one overall pick. And with the New Orleans Pelicans winning that lottery last week, we'll ask him how he expects Zion to fit into the New Orleans team and New Orleans the city, and whether that can change Anthony Davis's mind at all about wanting to leave. So a couple good interviews set up for tonight, and a bunch of great sports to talk about, Corey.
I tell you what, Dalton, there's not a day goes by to where there's not exciting news breaking in the world of sports. That's why you and I love doing Sports Night each and every Monday night, because the dynamics that change on a daily and weekly basis are outstanding. But you're exactly right. A lot of great things going on with the New Orleans Pelicans franchise. A lot of great things going on in the world of softball and boxing and racing and golf. So just so many things to talk about tonight.
Yeah, and I want to get into all of that in the headlines just in a few minutes here. But first, I want to point out that we are in the finalists for Nappy Awards, and we really appreciate everyone who went out there and nominated Sports Night to be in the Nappy Awards. I keep saying, if we were to somehow win the Nappy for Best Sports Show here in this area, that would be like a rookie coming in and winning the MVP award their first year, because we've been on the air here for, I think, 10 months now, maybe going on 9 months. We started right before last football season, and Corey and I have been on the air every week since, and thank you so much for nominating us. You can vote now at votenappies.com through June the 2nd. I think you have through midnight of June the 2nd. You can vote up to once a day, but we really appreciate everyone who nominated Sports Night and those who continue to vote, And thank you to everyone out there for doing that. You can follow Corey on Twitter at CA LaBounty, and you can follow me at Dalton Orwig, DalTonOrwig. But let's go ahead and go through some headlines, Corey, and we got to run through the NBA and NHL playoffs first. And yesterday in the playoffs, the Toronto Raptors went ahead and beat Milwaukee in double overtime, 118-112. Even though Milwaukee still leads that Eastern Conference Finals 2-1, Toronto finally got a game on the board. And it was all because of their guy, Kawhi Leonard. He ended up scoring 36 points, including 8 points in that second overtime. I think Giannis fouled out in the second overtime, or did he foul?
He fouled out in maybe the second overtime. I know it was a controversial call that really made the difference into where he was going to have to sit. So it might have been at the end of the first overtime that he fouled out.
And you have, of course, the self-proclaimed King of Toronto there, right beside the on the floor, basically, Drake yelling at Giannis as he heads to the bench. That was kind of a fun thing to watch, those interactions. But Kawhi was really the man last night, and he has to be the man for them to win games. His defense single-handedly basically held Giannis down. I think Giannis only had 2 points when he went up against Kawhi. I think he had 13 points for the whole night. And we're talking about two of the MVP candidates here in the NBA, even though I guess Kawhi wasn't a finalist, was he?
You had
Giannis, James Harden, and
Paul George,
the three finalists for the MVP. But Kawhi certainly mentioned among those guys pretty often, and he had a night to remember yesterday. Pascal Siakam, he had 25 points and 11 rebounds in the win. And Milwaukee, surprisingly, their top two scorers both came off the bench. You had George Hill scoring 24 and Malcolm Brogdon adding 20. And you never want your two top scorers to be bench players.
No question about it. It was 4:24 left to go at the beginning of the second overtime, so it was essentially the entire second time that you did not see Giannis on the floor, and that makes a difference. I know he struggled last night and didn't have the type of performance that you would have liked to have seen, but that Drake curse last night was pretty interesting because Meek Mill came with the Milwaukee Bucks jersey on, and Drake held it up because he knows all about that Drake curse. But what a huge win for Toronto. They definitely didn't want to get swept.
No.
Unlike the Portland Trail Blazers, who have given a couple of games away, Dalton, but a great game nonetheless last night.
Yeah, and speaking of those Portland Trail Blazers, they'll try to at least put one win on the board. They tip off at 8 o'clock tonight. Game 4 in Portland. Golden State leads that series 3-0. But now they've already been without Durant. They've already been without Boogie Cousins. And it looks like they will be at least tonight without Andre Iguodala. We're talking three of their top six guys. He's out with a sore left calf. And the number on that game, Golden State opened as 3-point favorites. And they've since been climbing down, especially with that new Iguodala news that he won't be out there. How do you think that affects Golden State tonight?
You know, I think that it really is going to affect Golden State because Portland has essentially given Golden State, if not two games, at least one out of the two games for sure, because now you're looking at the Splash Brothers to really, really be effective, and they're going to have to shoot the ball tremendously from the perimeter. And I think Portland has made the adjustments from game number one where they just let Steph Curry go crazy from beyond the arc and hit 9 threes. I don't think that will be the case tonight. The shot attempts will come up by the Warriors, but Draymond is going to have to step up his game. The Splash Brothers are going to have to score at least 20 apiece. If the Warriors are able to get 20-plus from Curry as well as Draymond, they have a chance, but I think Portland's going to win this one tonight.
You know, they're a better team with Durant on the floor, but I love watching Golden State when Durant's not playing. It's just some beautiful basketball. The way they have to get open, they move so much, and then when Curry's on, he is on. And when Klay Thompson's on, he's on too. But no one's on like Steph Curry when he's hitting shots. Just some beautiful basketball to watch. And especially with Draymond playing the kind of defense he's been playing these last couple weeks, just some great basketball all the way around. In the NHL playoffs, you've got one team that's already booked their ticket for the Stanley Cup, and that's Boston. They wrapped it up last Thursday. So they've been waiting a while already, and they're going to have to wait a little bit longer because the finals in the Stanley Cup don't start until the 27th of this month. In the other side, on the Western Conference Final, you got St. Louis and San Jose. And yesterday, St. Louis blew out the Sharks 5-0. So now the Blues have a 3-2 series lead. Jaden Schwartz with his second hat trick of these playoffs. And the goalie, who's really been the game changer for St. Louis this year, Jordan Binnington, had his first career playoff shutout yesterday. You know, they were last in the league on January 1st. St. Louis Blues, the worst team in the NHL. This guy Binnington comes in and starts shutting teams out, and the Blues finally figured out on offense. Now they're one game away from making it into their first Stanley Cup final since 1970, so they have a chance to wrap that up tomorrow night at home in Game 6. We'll talk with Taren Walk here. This is what we're going to focus on in this next segment, is the fight that happened in Brooklyn over the weekend. And that fight that I'm talking about is, of course, the Bronze Bomber, Deontay Wilder, defending his WBC heavyweight title belt, and he defended it in a heck of a fashion. Knocked out Dominic Brazil in 2 minutes and 16 seconds, and here's that call. We'll run to that call real quick, and we'll wrap up headlines, and then we're going to talk with Taren Walk, because she was actually there at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn this weekend. But here's Deontay Wilder knocking him out.
Well, credit to Brazil for having the character to throw with him.
That was the call. Announcers fired up. I've, You can hear that, and you can't hear it as well right now from this audio cut that I grabbed, but watching TV, you could hear that punch. That was the most, that was the loudest punch I might have ever heard.
Dalton, I tell you what, Mike Tyson growing up was the other ferocious heavyweight champion that I loved to watch throw punches, but Brazil got hit so hard on the side of his face that his opposite earlobe extended out. It was just a tremendous knockout punch. So much frustration that was pent up to him, and to this day, like Wilder says, he won't ever forget that hook that hit him upside the head and just absolutely dropped him. And then when he got up, he still was stumbling back and refused to do the interviews with Jim Gray afterwards. Yeah. But again, Wilder getting it done on Saturday.
So Wilder now 41-0-1, 40 knockouts, that one draw coming against Tyson Fury in December. Maybe we'll see a Tyson Fury rematch. Maybe we will finally see title unification with Anthony Joshua. Maybe he'll climb into the ring. Or we could get another rematch, Luis Ortiz, who Wilder has already knocked out. We'll ask Taryn Walk who she thinks Wilder will fight next and when he'll be able to fight, because he didn't sweat much on Saturday night. He should be ready to go. And to wrap up headlines real quick, Brooks Koepka looked like he was going to have a record-setting weekend. Through Friday, he had the 36-hole record at Bethpage Black. I think he had the PGA Championship 36-hole record. And then he just kind of held on Saturday and Sunday and survived Dustin Johnson, another great golfer who was working his way up the leaderboard. But Koepka ends up winning the PGA Championship by 2 strokes, his 4th major in 8 tries, 4 majors in the last 23 months, and this guy's just getting it done. So more Koepka on the way and more headlines on the way, but coming up next, we're talking with Taryn Walk. She's with the Tuscaloosa News, and she was in Brooklyn for that Deontay Wilder fight this weekend. We'll get her thoughts on that. Also, Alabama softball moving into the super regionals of the NCAA softball championship, and Alabama football. You know we got to pick her brain on that. That's coming up next on Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty in with you on this Monday night. And a pleasure to talk to someone we have not talked to before on Sports Night. She writes sports for the Tuscaloosa News and does a great job at that, I might add. And she was in Brooklyn this weekend for the big Deontay Wilder fight, which ended up lasting just over 2 minutes. Taryn Walk from the Tuscaloosa News, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
No problem. I'm glad to be on the show.
So
it's in the afternoon, so I could have rested.
Yeah, perfect, because I know you had a long, long weekend. Did you make it back safely from Brooklyn, I should first ask?
Yes, I did. I got in well after midnight this morning, technically, but all is well, and got to catch up on sleep a bit.
And that's so cool. That's something I've never been to a heavyweight title fight in my life. And with Tuscaloosa's own Deontay Wilder, first off, I got to ask you personally, how long have you been following Deontay Wilder, and how many of his fights have you been able to make it to? Is this the first big fight you've gone to?
This is the second. I took over covering Deontay Wilder when Aaron Suttles left the Tuscaloosa News. He's okay. Now with The Athletic. But following-wise, well over a year at this point, as soon as I found out I'd be taking over, which was, oh gosh, a year and a half ago, I started following along, learning everything I could about boxing, even had like a sit-down with his trainer. I'm probably one of the few people who can say JD's taught me how to throw a punch. I just wanted to learn about the sport before being thrown into it, covering-wise. So I went the first boxing fight I ever covered was the Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder one, so I got thrown into the deep end surely, but I've learned much about it since and can tell you a lot about Wilder and his recent fights. So hit me with the questions about this one specifically.
I tell you what, when you look at the situation that Wilder came into, it he had a lot of pent-up frustration coming off of his last fight, and it was just absolutely evident the distaste and the dislike that he had for Brazil in regards to the in-ring antics that had gone on. You know, some people just try to sell tickets, but he hit him with one punch that absolutely rearranged his other ear hole. Did it sound as loud in person as it did on television?
Oh, yeah. My jaw was probably dropped longer than the fight lasted. could hear it from where I was sitting, and it was just like, that's it. We knew it, like, instantly that was it. Like, he stood up, but you could tell he couldn't stay right on his feet, and that's why they called it. But when you talk about the animosity, it's interesting because when it was Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, it was so obvious there was respect between the two. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously they talk trash, they promote the fight and build it up, but they'd be respectful when it came down to talking about each other's careers. This one, oh, there was no respect between the two to begin with because of all the personal animosity, the stuff that went down in Birmingham and afterwards. So it is true hatred. And then afterwards, they apparently loved each other. I guess we got it out of his system in that one punch. That's why it was so hard.
Yeah, it's good to see him make up sometimes after all the pre-fight antics. What was your kind of overall sense with Wilder's mindset going into this fight? Not so much with how much he hated Dominique Brazil, but coming off his first near loss, he still hasn't lost, but that draw, that fight with Tyson Fury that you were talking about, I mean, this is a really, you know, a really important part of Wilder's career, even though he's the current WBC heavyweight champ. He wants to win the rest of those titles, and you're not going to win those titles with a loss to a guy like Dominique Brazil. Did you get the sense from his camp and from Wilder that this was a more important fight than anyone he's had before?
They'll always say the next fight is the most important one, which is true because they fight so rarely. But when it came to this one, it wasn't a secret that Fury outboxed Wilder during their fight. That's why it ended up being a draw, because Fury didn't send Wilder to the canvas once, and Wilder sent him twice. So that's how it evened out in my mind and on the scorecard, obviously. But after that, Wilder, I guess, learned the lesson, and that's why he said he, like, stripped himself back down to the basics, completely started over from square one with his stance, follow through defensive positions and upper body movement. So I definitely think he wants to prove that he isn't always as rushed or as unorthodox as people think. He was rushed during the theory because he wanted it so bad to prove himself, and he admits that too. But for this one, you didn't get to see the fundamentals were back and stronger than ever because it was so quick. But everyone afterward, like his trainers, like, honestly, if it had gone, you would have noticed a lot more. But even in that, he knew where to line up exactly. He hit him with the jab first, and it kind of like pushes his face in the right angle, and he goes for it. So it's like it was perfectly executed, not one of his normal unorthodox ones. And even with those, he does that because when somebody's hurt and reeling, they automatically put their arms up in a defensive position where you know the jab or cross is going to come. So that's why he's kind of unorthodox, swinging from every which angle, because it's unexpected.
And he's such a hard puncher that when you have a guy that's hurt, even when they're covering their head, he's able to knock them out with their own hands, kind of like the dad playing with his kid move there. He is so powerful that he's able to punch through whatever kind of protection they've put up in front of their head. It's really amazing to watch him fight. And I know now, especially with more and more people tuning in for each fight, Wilder, his punch is starting to be mentioned with the Mike Tyson, some of the greatest heavyweight punchers of all time, wondering, is this guy the hardest puncher we've ever seen? I mean, when you get audio like you did from the other night where that one punch, I recorded it and I played it over and over and over again because it was such a solid shot that knocked Dominique Brazil to the canvas. But after the fight, what did Wilder say? I know in his post-fight conversation, Luis Ortiz made it up into the ring and was maybe trying to get together for a rematch with his fight, which Wilder actually knocked him out. But Wilder might have bigger fish on his plate, especially now going on 34 years old. He wants this Anthony Joshua or a Tyson Fury rematch, right?
Definitely he wants the big ones, but at this point, like, he knows he proved himself and, like, he is being named finally with the big name, and so I think he can leverage himself a lot more. I don't think the Fury rematch will happen soon, because, or at least this year, because of the top rank deal he has there. But it's definitely still on the table. Shelley Finkel, Wilder's co-manager, said he's in constant contact with Fury's people. He's still in contact right now, even. He said he was meeting him Sunday or today. I can't remember which day, to talk that through. I don't know if that's going to be next or in two fights. But and then Luis Ortiz is also on the table. So it's like he has options, and he wants to be back in the ring. And JD said it could be September or October. Like, he was in and out of that. He's fine.
No doubt about it. I mean, you're looking at a 2 minute and 17 second knockout, and now you look at Wilder retaining his title for the ninth consecutive time, and he ties Muhammad Ali during his first title reign, also Joe Frazier and Mike Tyson in Mike Tyson's first title reign. When you start talking about the greatest of all time from a heavyweight standpoint, when you talk to Wilder, how much pride does he take in historically knowing that that's where his name stands now?
Oh, so much. He wants to be the best of the best. He wants, his ultimate goal is to unify the division and have all the belts. That requires beating Fury so the lineal is off the table, and that requires beating Joshua to get the three other big ones. But right now, he still thinks he's the best. He takes so much pride in it, and he was patient. He's like, I'm finally getting my respect that I deserved, but I was patient, and I'm just glad it's finally here. So, and then when you talk about like the numbers, 217 is the fastest, is the 15th fastest heavyweight title knockout, so that's up there. Mm-hmm. And then when his ninth successful title defense makes him the 10th heavyweight ever to do so consecutively, and he's up there, and the numbers prove it, and I think finally people are catching on.
Yeah, and it's so great because, you know, boxing's been in a downturn for the, well, since Tyson retired, really. They haven't had that one guy who brings entertainment, whether he's talking on the microphone or actually fighting. You get the Floyd Mayweathers who are fun to watch before the fight, and then they get in there and they're just impossible to hit. It's not as much fun to watch. But when you got a guy like Wilder that goes in there and throws with everything he has and isn't afraid to take a shot, that might be something that's able to bring a lot more eyes to boxing. And I know as far as Alabama, the state, it seems like Mobile and some of these other areas are just now starting to really catch on. Like, hey, we have the heavyweight champ from Alabama, and he's not only winning, but he's been dominating. What's it like there in Tuscaloosa? How much fire has he caught on in Tuscaloosa? I mean, when he has a fight, is it talked about around town like it's the next Alabama game?
I feel like for me it is, because it's all that consumes my life at the time, work-wise. But definitely people who know I cover him ask all the time, how's he doing, what's next, and all that kind of thing. And I know, like, there is a sense of pride, especially from those who are born and raised here, live here. Like, students might not as much. I mean, I think they do now at this point, since he's being recognized nationally. But Tuscaloosa as a whole, you saw Walt Maddox tweet about him and congratulate him. I do think he's getting the love he deserves.
Yeah. For sure. Well, we're talking with Taryn Walk from the Tuscaloosa News. She was up in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center this weekend for Deontay Wilder's heavyweight title defense. And while you were up there in Brooklyn, another team that's pretty dominant here in Alabama, the Alabama Crimson Tide softball team, just kept doing what they do. They won another regional heading into the Super Regionals this weekend against Texas. Talk just generally about the season that Alabama softball has had. I know they make it to the regionals at least every year, and they seem to win the regionals every year, but this team this year kind of seems like they might even be better than some of the teams in the past.
They really want to prove themselves. Edwin Stanton, our sports editor, covers them, but from reading his content, I can tell, like, I know there was this big number 8 in the locker room because that was what they were ranked in preseason, and they just wanted to beat that, and they did because they were the top seed at SEC. So obviously beat that. And then they were ranked the 8th seed also going into NCAAs, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, well, we're just going to keep that up there and let it motivate us again. So I think there's a fire lit under there because they probably aren't exactly too happy with how last season ended. And I'm excited to see how far they can take it. It's nice to see other sports, obviously football too, but like, yeah, it's nice to see other sports get the recognition. And like, this town does love softball.
They do. I mean, you know, Pat Murphy's been there an eternity and has done a wonderful job. Lost that heartbreaking SEC championship game to Florida, but now they have an opportunity to play the Texas Longhorns this coming Thursday in the Super Regional in Tuscaloosa. So I know the Tuscaloosa area is going to come out and show out like they always do for the Crimson Tide Lady Softball players. And again, supporting Coach Murphy, who they were able to keep on staff a couple of years ago. He was flirting with leaving. In this situation, it proves that he made the right decision staying with the Crimson Tide.
For sure. Well, Taryn, it's been a great time talking with you. I love talking boxing, and it's just so cool that, you know, Tuscaloosa's own is the heavyweight champion of the world. It's weird to say almost, and you get to cover it, and it's so cool that you got to go up there to the fight. We'll have to talk to you before Deontay's next fight, which could be in a couple months with how clean he came out of that last one. And also when Alabama football starts to roll along, we need to get you back on the air.
Definitely, for sure. I'm still running the high post-fight.
That's awesome. All right, thank you. That's Taryn Walk from the Tuscaloosa News, joining us here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Deontay Wilder, and still the heavyweight champion of the world. We'll see who he gets next, Corey, whether it's Joshua Fury or another fight with Ortiz, or, you know, somebody we haven't even brought up yet. We don't know, but Deontay Wilder hopefully keeping things running for the state of Alabama.
And he definitely deserves that huge mega fight, no matter whether it comes in a couple of more fights, but you're only going to be in your boxing prime for so long. When you see fighters, I mean, I think back to Tyson Holyfield, when that first should have occurred prior to Mike Tyson getting incarcerated, that would have been a mega million-dollar fight. Mm-hmm. And then you look at Mayweather and Pacquiao. It got delayed, and it's a situation to where you know that Wilder's telling people it's going to happen, just have to be patient. And sometimes with boxing, your body's not getting any younger.
No.
So you want to see them get after it in their prime.
And Wilder was a late starter to begin with. I mean, he didn't even start boxing until he was 20. Now he's 33 going on 34. And I know we've seen boxers go into their mid-40s. But to be a heavyweight and take those heavyweight shots, I think the career is a little bit shorter than the rest. And if you're taking a shot from Anthony Joshua, I'm not sure there's a 45-year-old man on the planet that can take one of those.
I agree. I mean, you look at Deontay Wilder's, though, net worth continues to go up. Every single win, and by this first round knockout, his net worth continues to go up, and disposing of his opponent the earlier you can, and the power in which he demonstrated, that's what people want to see. That's what people want to pay to see. They don't want to see you sit and pity pat around with somebody for 12 rounds.
No.
They want to see you go for the gusto and knock you out, and that's exactly what Wilder's going to bring.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, you said net worth. His net worth is climbing. A guy whose net worth is about to jump up big time, Zion Williamson. Once he signs that new shoe deal, once he gets a few more endorsements, and then once he gets that rookie contract signed with the New Orleans Pelicans, Zion Williamson's net worth is going to be up there. And to talk about that next with us is a blog editor-in-chief for the Bird Rights. That's a New Orleans Pelicans blog. Ollie Cosell. We're going to talk with him about the big news in New Orleans with the Pelicans winning the draft lottery last week. And it looks like pretty much a sure thing that Zion will be headed to New Orleans unless something crazy happens in the NBA, which I wouldn't put it past them. Maybe they'll trade that one pick. Maybe Anthony Davis will come back to New Orleans. Who knows? We'll ask Ollie Cosell when we get back right here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. I'm Dalton Orwig. Corey LeBounty sits across from me. Thank you to Taryn Walk from the Tuscaloosa News breaking down that Deontay Wilder knockout. I don't know. Can you call that a fight? I mean, I guess Brazil threw some punches.
He tried.
Maybe one or two landed. Didn't do much, but let's just call it a demolishing. We talked to her about the Deontay Wilder demolishment on Saturday night, and looking forward to talking with her again. And also another first-time interview we have here with the big news in New Orleans last week, and the Pelicans winning the NBA draft lottery with only a 6% chance to get that number one overall pick. It's time to talk with Ollie Cosell. He's the editor-in-chief at the Bird Rights. That's a New Orleans Pelicans blog on SB Nation. I love reading Ollie's work and his Twitter feed where Ollie, thank you for joining us tonight. First off, I guess I should start the conversation off that way. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, guys. How are you doing over there in Mobile? Sharing the joy?
Yeah.
New Orleans?
We are excited, man. And we were excited when Boogie got the call to come to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. We were happy when it looked like Anthony Davis was happy. But now that Zion looks to be getting his ticket very soon to become a New Orleans Pelican, I imagine that the entire fan base is just completely excited about that beyond words. But with only a 6% chance of getting that first overall pick to begin with, I know following at the Bird Rights on Twitter and following you on Twitter, over the last few months, you guys have been putting out, I guess, mobile iPhone, Android wallpapers of different draft prospects. And you had Zion up on one of those wallpapers that people could download, and you had Ja Morant and even RJ Barrett. But I'm sure most of the people that were putting Zion on their phones were like, no chance in hell that we have a chance at Zion. We're not going to get that first overall pick. But when that lottery ball didn't come up last week, when New Orleans was the very last lottery ball to show up, what was your reaction to getting Zion Williamson, basically?
Yeah, so my first reaction was, wow, a lot of teams moving up. I thought that would reduce New Orleans' chance, right, mm-hmm. when you saw Lakers and both Memphis had moved up ahead of them. But then when we were in the Final Four, I was giddy because, let's face it, I thought there was a 3-4 chance right there to get Zion. I thought for sure that, from what I've been hearing, yeah. that the New York Knicks would undoubtedly trade Zion if they could get Anthony Davis. I know there had been some reports refuting it, but there was also a lot that were saying they would. And knowing James Dolan, you know, you got to expect that guy wants to win now like he always has. So it looked good. And, of course, we know the Lakers' interest in Anthony Davis. So. Right. It looked really good, but, you know, you still feel better when you end up number one. But I'll tell you what, when it was between Memphis and New Orleans, I thought, wow. Well, Ja Morant, that's going to be happy. You know, we're extremely excited to get him as well. But, yeah, with Zion, you just have to lose your mind. I mean, the 6% chance. Having won Anthony Davis, you know, not that long ago, even though Pelicans had a 13.7% chance, landing Zion was completely unexpected. And I'm sure everybody, you know, if you follow New Orleans basketball at all, you saw the reactions around town, but especially – I've got to highlight the fact that the Pelican sales team, there was mm-hmm. about 50 of them in a room, and the camera caught them just exploding in joy. So that's become one of our favorite moments and memories of the news breaking that, you know, first-round pick to New Orleans.
Yeah, and that was fantastic, the sales team. And then what no one sees is right after that they got to work because they sold a bunch mm-hmm. of season tickets last week once you guys won the lottery.
Yeah, from what I heard, they've doubled the amount of sales after the great news than they did 7 years ago when they landed Anthony Davis.
Wow.
So that right there tells you whose hype is selling a lot more.
Yeah, I agree. Zion is just going to get it done if that is the way that the New Orleans Pelicans decide to go. So many different scenarios and packages have been brought about, and the question whether Anthony Davis is going to go ahead and be a Pelican next season and play in New Orleans, because everyone knows that he definitely demanded a trade, did not want to finish the season with the Pelicans, but did. But the Pelicans have since restructured their organization. They go and hire assistant general manager from the Brooklyn Nets, Trajan Langdon, and then have a new executive vice president of basketball operations, David Griffin, bringing those two gentlemen to the table of the Pelicans. Maybe it will change some minds.
Yes, but that's what everybody hopes for and believes in. But, guys, I'll be honest with you. Even though Gail Benson and the Pelicans are hitting home runs with their hires, every time something happens that's good news, I keep hearing from Anthony Davis's camp that it hasn't changed a thing for him. And the latest rumors, and this concludes yesterday from what I've heard from his people, that he is still dead set on wanting to leave New Orleans. So I know that David Griffin, he's one of the best salesmen that there are regarding executive GMs around the league, and people, you know, highly respect him. If anybody can get a deal done to convince, you know, a Rich Paul client to stay somewhere, it would be Griffin. But again, like I said, everything I've heard, and look, the expectation was that Anthony Davis would leave no matter what, even before all the good news started happening. I had heard well before his trade request that chances are he was going to leave town. So, again, it would make for a great story, and man, would it be great to see how teams would, you know, try and stop Zion and Anthony Davis on the court. And we can't forget Drew Holiday, so that's mm-hmm. a legitimate three-headed monster, but I don't think it's going to happen, guys.
And Drew Holiday looked so good last year, especially once they started sitting Anthony Davis more. It became evident that he's a guy that could be one of the big three guys when you're trying to match the teams like Boston and Philly and L.A., well, what L.A. wants to be. But Drew Holiday certainly looked good. You know, one thing since then, the national media, even that night after the lottery last week, they've just been bashing New Orleans, the city, New Orleans, the organization. Let me play this clip for you. This was Max Kellerman trashing New Orleans recently.
New Orleans is the single worst place Zion could have wound up, and it's for this one reason. Forget about the fact it's not a huge, glamorous market or anything like that. They are a stingy organization who treats the players, their most valuable commodities, cheaply.
Were you able to hear that, Ollie, that Kellerman clip
no,
right there?
No, but I'm pretty sure I've seen it. Is it the one where he talks down and basically talks about what our problems used to be, where, you know, everything's outdated?
Yeah, well, he says that it's a stingy organization. He says that they're not willing to spend money on players, and that's the reason Anthony Davis is so upset. And that's kind of the spin. Once Rich Paul got in Anthony Davis's ear, all the talk was that New Orleans isn't doing what it takes to keep a player like Anthony Davis on the team. What are your thoughts about New Orleans being a stingy organization, as Kellerman called it, and how much of this hate from the national media is just because New York and L.A. don't get Zion Williamson?
Right, yeah, we all saw that Kellerman video, just like we saw Colin Coward, you name it, all spewing, honestly, just ridiculous garbage. I mean, it's one thing to talk about what happened in the past, and it's true. The Pelicans didn't do well enough in a lot of areas, which kind of undermined the team's success. So Anthony Davis had a right to be unhappy about that. But, you know, like I said, you've got to put it in the context, and that was yesterday. They have since, and Gail Benson made that promise she would change everything, commit every resource she has to building a winning organization, and she has. You know, David Griffin's not cheap. He might be the highest paid executive GM in the league now. And he came with a list of demands that were very long, and he even admitted himself they were outrageous, but she agreed to all of them. For instance, he wanted to, just for one aspect alone, he wanted for the Pelicans to spend about $1 million to upgrade their training and training medical staff, facility, weight room, all that type of stuff. She has so far committed $800,000, and they're going to be breaking new ground soon to build that. So that's just one example of what they're going to do. So like I said, that's a very lazy take for like Max or anybody else, because this news was well-known prior. And for them to just completely go along the same line, calling the Pelicans stingy, well, that's just simply not true. It's a brand-new day in New Orleans, and it's time for people just to realize that. And so you can't use that excuse for Anthony Davis anymore, because he understands what's going on. He sees it. But for him, it's much bigger than just New Orleans anymore, I think. I think he truly wants to move on and live in a different city. He's just made it well known. And his people, you guys have heard all the stories about Rich Paul wanting to get him to Los Angeles Lakers. Well, I truly believe that he's being talked and kind of forced into doing it. So there's no hope. But again, the media preys on that, and you've just got to ignore it, guys. You've just got to look at the facts. And so that's why we don't really pay attention to those national types that say stories like that.
Again, you're familiar with Boogie Cousins. He spent a season there, or ended his season there, with a torn Achilles last year. Unfortunate situation, but the Pelicans were still able to make that push and eliminate the Portland Trail Blazers last year in the playoffs. With Boogie Cousins leaving and Alvin Gentry's job possibly being up for grabs, he's found a way this past season to do the best he could. But Alvin Gentry is an outstanding coach, and I think he can lead this Pelicans franchise into the future. Would you agree with that assessment of Alvin Gentry?
Absolutely, Corey. And it's great to hear that somebody from the outside sees it like that, because very few people, even in New Orleans, you know, when they wanted to redo everything, AD was leaving, they wanted Alvin to go as well, even after David Griffin got hired. But he is a respected coach. I mean, we caught Magic Johnson today endorsing the fact that Zion Williamson has a good head coach to learn from under, which is Alvin Gentry. So a lot of us like Alvin. We see how well he's done when he's had the talent, the roster around him. For instance, he was able to go on that stretch despite the fact they lost to Marcus Cousins 2 years ago, was because he got Nikola Mirotic out there. And the keys were handed to Rajon Rondo. So you saw what his system can do when he has the players in it. Unfortunately, this year, it was sidetracked. If everybody remembers, Pelicans started 4-0, injuries hit, and they were just never the same. They could never recover. And this time it was worse, because Anthony Davis legitimately had won it out. He made up his mind, and so that really much destroyed any hope of a season.
Well, you know, right after the lottery, a lot of talk that Zion should go. But the same people that were saying Zion should leave Duke early, now saying he should go back to Duke for another year. And his stepfather, and I think even his high school coach, came out and said, yeah, you know, that's not what we're doing. We've never even thought about going back to Duke. So let's assume that New Orleans picks him number one overall, which is a pretty good chance of that happening. And even without AD on the court, let's say AD is traded this offseason, how do you think Zion fits on the court year one? You think he's got all-pro potential already coming out of college?
I think he's got the ability, but I don't think he's going to be able to be consistent. And that's where you kind of be awarded an All-Star game, earn an All-NBA an award, or any kind of postseason award, even though I think he's a runaway for the Rookie of the Year. But I see what you're asking. And I think even Zion, even with all his talent, it's going to take him a while, just like it did LeBron James up in Cleveland. You know, he's going to be able to do a lot of things on a court that is going to, you know, he's going to overwhelm the competition because of his athleticism, his ball handling, his size. those stats translate. A lot of stats always translate, they say. And his advanced numbers blew away anybody else from the last couple decades that have come out of the college ranks. So I have some full expectation that his rookie year is going to be better than, say, Anthony Davis's on paper.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as in terms of, say, maybe helping and being the center, or I should say maybe the leader, that's not going to happen yet. To see him try and push the Pelicans into the playoffs, that's highly doubtful to see, because he's got a lot of things to learn. The NBA game is vastly different. And, of course, you got to remember, it's 82 games. People don't realize it, but even somebody is built and as rugged looking as Zion, they're going to hit a couple of rookie walls. Mm-hmm. So it's tough to see. But it's going to all depend on, guys, honestly, for anybody hopeful for the Pelicans making the playoffs next year. You got to look at how Griffin fills out the rest of the team. If they get a bunch of young vets like a package from Boston, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, then I give them a really good shot. But if they go with, say, the Knicks, get a bunch of rookies, guys that didn't perform well last year, then I don't see them, you know, doing so well.
That's some great stuff. We're talking with Ollie Cosell, editor-in-chief at The Bird Rights, the New Orleans Pelicans blog on SB Nation. Some fantastic content there, and lots of it written by Ollie himself. And I guess we'll leave you with this question here, Ollie. With Zion apparently heading to New Orleans, you know, there's certain athletes that New Orleans seems to have been made for them. You got Drew Brees, who the city has really gotten behind. Alvin Kamara, New Orleans just seems to love. His personality, he kind of just says whatever he wants. Anthony Davis, I never really got that feeling from him, but Zion seems like a guy who's just marketable, not only on the court, but off the court. You think New Orleans is going to completely welcome him with open arms?
Yeah, because they already have. Actually, everybody I've talked to, when you scan all social media pages, it's not just New Orleans, it's actually the whole region,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then I've been hearing that a lot of people outside even the region are happy that he's going to a small market, one with such a good front office and head coach that he couldn't have landed in a better position. Because think about the big lights of the city, joining LeBron James, whatever other scenario would have been a lot tougher. So chances for success are high, but New Orleans is definitely already excited. They love that big personality. And you guys gave two very good examples in Brees and Kamara. And I've got to include Cam Jordan.
Yeah.
We have been waiting for the Pelican side of things for a big personality like that. Somebody that's humble but outspoken, and his game does all the talking. We can't wait.
It should be fun to watch, and we can't wait to keep talking with this about you, Ollie. We'd love to have you on the show again to talk some Pelicans basketball in the near future.
Absolutely, guys. I'd be more than happy to.
And where can people follow you on Twitter and find your work?
Sure. We're located on the SB Nation umbrella, so you'll find all of our articles and podcasts located there, all under one word, thebirdrights.com.
Okay.
And please be sure to follow us on social media as well, under the same name, on Twitter and on Facebook, where, as you guys already mentioned, we're pretty active. We
oh,
like
yeah.
to speak what's on our mind.
That's for sure. Great follows all the way around. Thank you, Ollie. Have a great one.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Ollie Cosell, editor-in-chief, The Bird Rights, the New Orleans Pelicans blog, and an exciting time to be a Pelicans fan, to say the least, Corey.
Well, if you don't have the combination of Zion Williamson and Anthony Davis, I think that's just fine, because if AD doesn't want to be there, which he evidently has said this past season, get him out, trade him, and get the most value that you can bring around Zion Williamson and build a franchise around him. It's going to start with a great point guard, because he's already having a great coach in Alvin Gentry.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, the ticket sales tripled in that one situation, to where I know they were probably ticket brokers on the phone 3 o'clock in the morning,
yeah.
taking ticket orders, and lines were busy, so they had to call back the next day. But I think the Pelicans will draft Zion Williamson from a standpoint of marketability. Every franchise that he plays against, it'll be a sellout, because people want to come see him play, not to mention being an hour away from, or 2.5 hours away from Mobile makes it even better.
Yeah, it's the LeBron effect. It's heading right to our area. We'll have basically the next LeBron James. We'll see if he fills those shoes, but the next LeBron James coming down to start his career in New Orleans. Another guy who might be an NBA player in the future, Trendon Watford, the Alabama basketball player, finally made his decision today. And when we come back to wrap up Sports Night here in this next segment, we'll tell you where Trendon Watford decided to go. Does he stay in state with the Alabama Crimson Tide, or does he head out of state to play for one of these other teams? And also the Tiger Woods talk from this weekend. You know, he was going in the favorite into the PGA Championship, ends up not making the cut. We'll cover those when we get back right here. Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead, this is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night.
Well,
Welcome, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty in with you on this beautiful Monday night. Thank you to Taryn Walk from the Tuscaloosa News talking Deontay Wilder with us, and Ollie Cosell from the Bird Rights, the New Orleans Pelicans SB Nation blog, talking all things Zion Williamson and Anthony Davis. Thank you to them for coming on the show tonight. And also thank you to ASBA Softball. You know, the season's coming up. It'll be here before you know it. 6-week-long season begins in mid-June. I know the draft they're gearing up for, June the 5th at Moe's Barbecue, the second entry draft for ASBA Softball, which will lead perfectly into their second year in operation. And I've been telling people, no one believes me, no one understands what I'm saying, but we have the top women's professional softball league in all of the world, all of America, and it's right here in our very own backyard. The things that Auburn Donaldson has put together here for ASBA softball, they are trending up if you look at them like they're stock. And what they're looking for right now is something that would help the league in a big way, and that's host families, because it's a 6-week-long season. The entire season played between these professional softball players who are the best at what they do. I mean, we're talking the best players in college going in to play professional softball. They're down here for 6 weeks competing, and they just need a place to stay. So they're looking for host families right now, and a lot of people say, you know, we'll have to put up money, we'll have to feed them. You don't have to do any of that. All you have to do is have a nice room for one of these pro athletes to stay in, and a closet or somewhere they can put their clothes, and that's it. You don't have anything else to do with them. Just give them a key to get in at night. It's a 6-week-long season, begins in mid-June. If you want to be a host family, I recommend it, especially if you have a child that's playing softball. You're talking a free professional mentor right there that can teach them some softball, teach them how to play, hit, field, all those good things, and you'll have them for 6 weeks right there at your very own house. If you want to find out more about becoming a host family for ASBA softball, just go to asbasoftball.com and make sure you go to the draft coming up on June 5th. Got some of the best local college players and college players from around the nation getting ready for that next year of professional softball. And speaking of softball, Alabama moving into the Super Regionals. We talked with Taryn Walk about that a little bit, but that's just one of 7 SEC teams. 16 teams remain, and 7 of them are from the SEC. Unfortunately, Auburn's night ended, their season ended yesterday with their second loss to Arizona. But Alabama moved through the regionals without a hitch, 3 wins in a row. Actually, their win yesterday was a close one. They were down 5-0 and had to come back to win that one. But you still got Kentucky in there, Ole Miss, Florida, Tennessee, and LSU. So once again, the SEC just dominating in college softball. And I'm sure that a ton of those players will eventually make their way down to Mobile to participate in ASBA softball. But the big news out of Alabama today is Trendon Watford, the 5-star out of Mountain Brook. Is that right?
That's correct.
Mountain Brook High School. And he finally made his decision. Alabama was one of the finalists on the list. You also had Memphis, Indiana, and LSU. And Corey, who did Trendon Watford end up picking this afternoon?
Welcome to the boot. Watford is going to LSU. LSU reinstated Will Wade, who was under investigation for the wiretap, saying that that possibly was paying a player in that situation. But he was reassured by his new athletic director, Scott Woodyard, when he went ahead and brought coach back. It's a situation Trendon said he felt most comfortable with that coaching staff. So Trendon Watford, the 5-star prospect from Birmingham, Alabama, will be attending LSU next season.
Man, it's crazy. I think most people gave him a 0% chance of going to LSU when Will Wade was under investigation, because it looked like Will Wade was about to be fired. Let's be honest. In the SEC tournament, did they sit him? They sat him for the second round of the NCAAs, right?
All the way through.
Okay, so they sat him for that, and it looked like Will Wade's time was up with the LSU Tigers, but he got some saving grace, and now he's the head coach still. I'm not sure that story's completely over, but with the amount of talent that seems to be leaving LSU, Trendon Watford's going to get a good chance to play some this
year. Not only that, here's the situation. If for some reason Will Wade is dismissed as the head coach, Trendon Watford can reevaluate his options and go into a transfer situation and not have to sit out. So Trendon Watford is going to win regardless of where he decides to go, whether it's at LSU with Will Wade or moving forward if Will Wade is removed as the head coach.
And Nate Oates will just have to wait for that next big player to come through Alabama. Corey, it's been a pleasure. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night, that does it for another week. We'll be back here next Monday. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.